City Current, produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or listen on KDAC 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome. We're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access, and it's Wednesday, October 11th. This is a Bismarck edition of City Current. I'm Mary Van Sickle, and because it's a Bismarck edition, Jason Tomanek is here, Assistant City Administrator for the City of Bismarck.
You got it.
And also with us today is Owen Fitzsimmons, who is a Bismarck Fire Marshal with the Bismarck Fire Department.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, both of you.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
And we're here to talk a lot about the fire. It's Fire Prevention Week, so we're here to talk about that and the Bismarck Fire Department. Mm-hmm. But before we get into those issues, I want to talk about the Bismarck City Commission meeting last night.
Absolutely.
Not a lot going on. A lot of housekeeping issues again.
Yep.
Another, which is normal.
Another variety of traditional city business, but yeah, it's part of what we do.
There were two items that got a little discussion, into some discussion with the commission. One of them being the Emergency Operations Center. And we've talked about that before on City Current about the need for a new facility for the region. This is a regional center, not just for the city of Bismarck.
Correct. CENCOM is what we call it. And really what it is, it's the radio support for first responders, and it covers Bismarck, Mandan, and Burleigh County. So it is a combined effort, certainly.
And they've outgrown their facility.
Yeah. They're currently located out by the airport, on the airport grounds, and that facility also doubles as the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center for the City of Bismarck, when we have crisis situations like the flood in 2011. But yes, the staff at CENCOM, they're crowded in there. I think Mike Dannenfelser made the comment last night that they're stacked in there like sardines. I've seen it. I would agree. They've definitely outgrown their space.
So a committee is established to look at the options of where they could go next.
Yes, there's a variety of opportunities for them to consider. It's either construct a new facility that's built to withstand natural disasters, but also house the staff, or it's finding an existing location that might be more complementary to their needs.
Mm-hmm. And last night, Mike Dannenfelser gave a report on those recommendations, and the City Commission took some action to move it forward.
Correct. And the preferred effort to move forward is to co-locate at the Dakota Carrier Network space in North Bismarck, DCN. It's up on 43rd and Coleman. And that facility is built for all natural disasters, and it also has much of the infrastructure that CENCOM would rely on to help with radio and emergency 911 communications.
And one of the other options was to build in an independent site.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So this seems like a logical, more cost-effective way to go forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. With the infrastructure already in place, it would require quite likely an addition or some type of remodeling to the existing facility. But with everything in place, it's just the right decision for everybody.
Another item, switching gears here, item that had a bit of discussion was this Silver Ranch addition. This is a development by Chad Wachter, a local developer, up in the very northeast part of Bismarck.
Right.
I believe we have a map that we could pop up and that shows that location. But Jason, maybe you could describe this location for our radio listeners.
Sure, absolutely. We're, as you said, we're in northeast Bismarck. So we're past Sunrise Elementary, and we're north of I-94, north of the interstate, and just south of 43rd Avenue. So for those of you in the radio world, this would be, I guess, the very northeasternmost corner of our community. And what we're looking at is primarily a residential neighborhood. There will be some commercial and office zoning to complement some of that, but it's primarily single and two-family homes in that area.
And I think this map does help demonstrate what the issue is. This is a little bit different than other developments that we've seen, because it's a non-contiguous area for our sewer and water, and that was the discussion last night, was utility services and how to get them there in a cost-effective way.
Yep. And to tell the whole story here, this is a conversation that started in 2015 when Mr. Wachter brought forward this development. And at that time, the city was still very much in a growth mold, and we had just experienced a significant growth pattern. This is an area that, as you said, it's not contiguous to existing city limits, so it's a bit of a reach for us, and primarily with water and sewer infrastructure. So we would be asked to extend water lines and sewer lines to reach this subdivision to support it as an urban subdivision, meaning water service comes from the city, the sewer is handled by the city, the roads and streets are maintained and plowed by the city, sure. First responders are there. So the problematic part is that it's leaping over undeveloped land as we know it today. So that's not the natural progression of city infrastructure.
Eventually fill in.
It will catch up, no doubt about it. But for now, this is a little different scenario than we're used to. Mm-hmm. But as I said, back in 2015, we were very supportive as staff of this type of project moving forward. We've had the luxury of time to look at this a number of different ways, and we're seeing some challenges for the city here, but we certainly see the potential and the opportunity that this brings with it for more homes and, you know, a larger tax base and a broader footprint and more growth for the city.
Right. And because this started, this development and the developer started the process quite a while ago, it's a bit of a conundrum for him as he moves forward, because the cost now is a more of a burden.
It is.
So we're trying to find an alternative.
And to be fair to the developer, we certainly recognize there's been an investment, a financial investment in this endeavor up to this point, and it's very difficult to change the message midstream. It's not fair for us to say, sorry, things are different, we can't do it this way anymore. So we're trying to work through all the scenarios and find the solution that works best for everybody.
And Gabe Schell provided some options to move forward. There were five options and which he could move forward on, but the commission ultimately said go back and investigate.
Try and find the money internally. So they directed the city's budget committee, which is a four-person committee. It's made up of the city's finance director, Sheila Hillman, city administrator, Keith Hunke, Commissioner Steve Marquardt, and then myself. Mm-hmm. So the four of us will meet and we'll look at every option that's on the table to try and figure out the best way for the city to help finance this project.
Fairly large price tag goes along with this for both sewer and water there too.
Yep. So. But as you said, it opens up other opportunities for development in that area as well,
right?
With the extension of the water line and the sewer line.
So. Okay, well, I'm sure you'll update us as time
Absolutely.
Goes on.
Yeah, we will definitely keep you in the loop.
Thank you. Now let's talk about the fire department a little bit. I know there's a lot going on. You have under construction right now is a new fire station. And we have talked about that as well on a previous city current episode.
Yep.
And that was when the commission gave approval to move forward.
Awarded the bids, yes.
So it's moving forward and it's kind of exciting. Can you explain a little bit where the new fire station is first?
4103 East Miriam. So we're on the east end of town, and it's located directly south of the National Guard Armory.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the building is currently under construction, and it's co-located with our training tower.
The burn building, I think we've called it in the past.
And I think we have some pictures of the construction and what the building's going to look like. Is it online? I mean, is the timeline going as expected?
As far as I know.
It's a beautiful building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is... what it will look like eventually. At the moment, we're very much in the construction stage.
Some concrete block walls is
that's
about
right.
it for now.
Yeah, there
foundation.
You go.
There we go.
There's the, this is the bay for
that's
the trucks.
It. That's it. So what you're looking at here is our fire engine bay. Mm-hmm. And those openings on the left side would be actual bay doors. We'd be moving trucks through those doors.
How does this compare in size with your other fire stations? Pretty much the same? Do you keep to the same size or is it?
Well, we try to keep in mind, you know, our needs as far as, you know, the sort of trucks, engines that are going to be located there, you know, living facilities, you know, for the firefighters and the crews that's assigned, as well as, you know, equipment, rooms, and, you know, workout facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But fairly comparable.
Yeah. So it's on track.
Yes.
Estimated absolutely. Time of completion would be?
That.
I believe it's fall of 18.
Okay.
So, and keep in mind, I know we've talked about this before, but this is to essentially replace this fire station that's at Sleepy Hollow, which that's is on right. Divide and near 26th Street. So that, it's my understanding that the crew that's assigned to that fire station will be moving out to this new station. Is that?
That's correct.
Correct? Yeah.
So, and part of the reason why, you know, we're moving from the station at Sleepy Hollow to the new location is, as Jason mentioned earlier, is the growth of the city to the northeast.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the new high school, we've got the new grade school, we've got commercial development and a lot of residential.
New residential subdivisions. Yeah. We just talked about one. That that area would be serviced by this station.
Absolutely. Yeah. But this still allows the fire department, you know, the crew from that station to respond, have a quick response avenue into the center of town and to its current area
north
of responsibility.
South with Centennial.
Absolutely. And then
easy access
into
to
town
Maine.
With Divide Avenue.
And all response times are so important. Those end up having an impact on homeowners' insurance rates and things, and of course, life-saving opportunities.
Yes.
So locating these fire stations is a critical piece to their ability to get to places in a timely fashion. So this is one more way we're responding to growth by moving a fire station over.
And you mentioned it's adjacent to the, as you call it, the burn building or the training facility. We keep calling it the new training facility, but it's been up and operating for a little while. Is that right?
That's right. So our crews are currently using it. We're using it almost every day. Absolutely. So the new the burn building, the training facility, it's co-located with the new fire station. They're on the same lot. So you know, getting into the new burn building or training facility, you know, it gives us now an opportunity to expand the fire department's ability to train in-house. You know, we can control a lot more of what we do. You know, we're less dependent on other departments and you know, other departments within the city for training opportunities.
It's readily available, accessible to you at all times. Do I understand as well that this is available to fire departments in the region?
Certainly.
So other groups can be using it as well?
Absolutely.
I think we have some pictures, too, if we could bring some of those up about the training facility and showing some of the firefighters in action, what they can do there. I don't think a lot of people know where this building is. Again, out by the National Guard building, it's not on a busy street or anything, so it's kind of
tucked off of Merriam Avenue a little bit. It's tucked back there, but certainly a Class A opportunity for these guys and gals to get better at the skills that they can provide. I believe these pictures were probably taken at the ribbon cutting, which was earlier this year. They did some demonstration work for us. It was great to see the crews in action and how this all works. It's really nice to see how the team effort here is very apparent.
And
it just seems so natural for these guys and gals when they're out there. Hats off to them for the work that they do.
And for a lot of what you're seeing here in the photos is now we've increased our ability to do more realistic training for our fire crews. So a big consideration or a big benefit of this particular building is we can smoke it up. We can create realistic fire conditions and we can do live burning.
Amazing.
So for our newer personnel, now their first experience with a fire is not going to be
an emergency situation.
Actual live fire. It's going to be in a controlled training scenario.
And with this being a multi-story building, there's opportunities like we're seeing on the screen right now for rappelling techniques and training.
Is, high angle rescue is what we're looking at right now. Yeah, using a training dummy. You know.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's fairly obvious, yes.
Definitely another great opportunity for the firefighters to hone their skills and practice things in a controlled environment, but in a safe environment as well. This building is designed to do just this.
Now, is this a training facility for firefighters that are already employed and working? For new firefighters, it's not a firefighter school.
It's not a school facility. This is for our continuing training program that we have for our crews at the fire department. Yep. So this keeps you know, we have standards of training that we have to keep up, you know, throughout the year. Standards of competency. So this allows us to keep current on a number of disciplines within firefighting. So, you know, we could do a variety of things, you know, like I said, live fire training, you know, we could do fire attack, we can do search and rescue, we can do downed firefighter rescue, we can do high angle rescue. It's a really great opportunity for us.
Looks like it's well used as well.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah. So we're also here to talk about Fire Prevention Week, and we're smack dab in the middle of Fire Prevention Week right now, because, again, just to remind our listeners that it's Wednesday, October 11th, so this program will play for another week, but it's an important week, especially for all the fire departments. Last week we had Manitowan Fire Chief Steve Nardello on talking about this as well. They talked a lot about the event that they had last night in the city of Manitowan for the parade and open house down at their fire station. So I saw something on the news this morning. Looked like they had a good turnout, which was awesome. But we're going to get a little more specific about Fire Prevention Week here, about what people can do in their own homes and what they can do to be safe. But first of all, do you want to talk a little bit about the origin of Fire Prevention Week?
Right. So Fire Prevention Week, President Calvin Coolidge, wrote the proclamation, declared this week around October 9th would be Fire Prevention Week going forward. And that was in commemoration of the Great Chicago Fire. So, I suppose we all kind of know the story, or generally the story of, Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over a lamp or something, a lantern in the barn, set the fire, and it spread, wiped out a great deal of the city. Yeah. So, we kind of get into that a little bit. As it turns out, that may not have been accurate. It's more of an urban legend.
Yeah. Legends.
That's right. And it was a Chicago Tribune, a journalist created that story and reported it. And a number of years
later.
Fake news.
A little sensational. Fake news even existed back then.
Yeah, but years later, he recanted that story and said that he didn't actually create it himself. So,
but it served a purpose. That story served a purpose. It was a great story for grade school kids thinking about that cow that started this great fire. Maybe it worked. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then, every year since 1925, there's been a different topic or a different focus for Fire Prevention Week. And, this year it's called Plan Two Ways Out. So plan two ways out of your home. And, if I could back up a little bit, Fire Prevention Week, it also coincides with our effort locally with we call it Fire Prevention Month in the public schools, or I should say the public schools, in the schools in Bismarck. Oh. And so we get our fire crews into the first, second, and third grade classes in every school in town, and we do some public education with them, and we cover these topics. So when we get to, Plan Two Ways Out, what we're talking about is, residential or home fire. So what we're going to be talking about is how do you get out of your home if there's a fire?
Sure.
Do you know how to get out of your home? Do you know two ways out of every room? Do you know the safest route? Do you know alternate routes? So what we encourage folks to do is take the time, walk around your home with your family, include all your family members, and talk about how you get out of every room, your bedrooms, your utility rooms, et cetera. So we encourage folks to, again, maybe draw a map if you have younger children, to involve them a bit more so they understand.
And practice.
Absolutely practice.
So have a drill.
Do a drill. And, we suggest doing a drill during the day, do a drill at night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Half of all home fires occur between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. So, the middle of the night, you find your home smoked up, your fire alarm going off. Those are stressful conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's not the sort of thing we encounter on a regular basis. So it's best to get ahead of it, have some sort of a plan.
Mm-hmm. Just recently, there was a fire in Bismarck, a home fire in Bismarck, I believe, on Boulevard Avenue.
Yep. Correct.
And that individual was awoken by a smoke alarm. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and so that leads us into smoke alarms.
Smoke alarms, yes. A critical component of fire preparation, or emergency preparation. So smoke alarms, residential smoke alarms, we say test them monthly. Test that battery. If it doesn't alarm, replace the battery. Then you get into, where do I put smoke alarms in my home? Where do I locate them? So we suggest on every level of the home, particularly pay attention to sleeping areas, your bedrooms, and the area outside. So place a smoke detector in every bedroom and then one outside of every sleeping area. Mm. Because, you know, we also suggest sleep with your bedroom doors closed. Mm-hmm. Because smoke tends to spread throughout the house. It'll hopefully be limited.
Contained.
Compartmentalized by closed doors. Mm-hmm. So that smoke alarm outside of your closed doorway to your bedroom, that'll give you hopefully enough warning to get out. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, the importance of smoke alarms, we have to consider modern, building construction, but modern furnishings, you know, what they're made of. Anymore, they're made of synthetics, almost, they're major
based.
That's right.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah. It's highly combustible, and it burns faster, it burns hotter, and the smoke that it gives off is far more toxic than it would have been, you know, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then that also decreases, you know, our time or our window to escape. So that smoke alarm is really a vital component in our, you know, our ability to get out of a house quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as soon as possible, call 911.
Absolutely.
Back to CENTCOM.
Yeah.
Kind of and close the loop on that whole conversation. Mm-hmm. It starts with that 911 call.
And good locations for our fire stations as well.
Yep.
Absolutely. Anything else on fire prevention? There's a lot we could talk about,
if,
I'm sure.
If we kind of get back to, you know, a little bit about, you know, our planning to get out of the home. You know, I'll just give you an example. My own home, I've got a 6-month-old infant and I've got a 2-year-old. So, you know, my planning is going to be different than somebody who, say, has children who are...
My kids are in middle
older.
School.
There you go.
So they can self-preservate or preserve themselves versus...
Exactly. So, you know, my consideration is how to get to my children and to get them out, get all of us out safely. And, you know, of course, you think about the little ones, the toddlers, et cetera. How do they react to an emergency? You know, mm-hmm. do they wake up in the middle of the night to smoke alarms, et cetera? They tend to hide or they freeze or, mm-hmm. you know. So those are considerations as well.
For those ages would be different, obviously, mm-hmm. than
sure.
your
definitely.
Age.
Yep.
Another consideration is if you have anybody in the home with any sort of disabilities or mm-hmm. anything that would limit their ability.
An elderly person.
To self-evacuate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as a fire marshal for the Bismarck Fire Department, is part of your duties then fire prevention? And you work with groups like, I'm thinking of the nursing homes,
Hospitals,
mm-hmm. those types of places. You also consult with them as well.
Well, sure. You know, we do. Some of our key demographics when it comes to the potential to be affected by fire. You know, we've got our very young and then our elderly segments of our population. So through the schools program, we address the children. You know, hopefully they can bring that message home to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
With the elderly, you know, we'll make. We'll do safety briefings with some of our elderly populations around town. Absolutely.
And the staff within those facilities as well to make sure that they know what techniques they can go through if an emergency arises.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they're also doing inspections in commercial buildings throughout the community. That's a big part of what the fire marshal's doing on a routine basis to make sure that not just living areas are safe, but also commercial areas, industrial areas, and things like that
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah. And that building inspection, I would assume, is going on from the beginning of a construction project throughout?
Throughout the life of the building, absolutely, mm-hmm. on an annual basis.
And throughout the construction process to make sure that
it even starts
is
at the plan review
absolutely.
Phase.
There,
the fire marshals are making sure that the fire suppression systems are there if required, making sure that they have the adequate water flow to if the sprinkler system did go off. So... the fire department is a critical department as mm-hmm. far as we're concerned with construction and then the ongoing inspections and maintenance as well.
Well, the fire department's a critical department,
absolutely.
Period.
Yep.
And now we're hearing, especially today and yesterday, about California and the drought mm-hmm. conditions there. It's just
it's
overwhelming.
Yep.
Yes, it's amazing. And we don't thank the first responders mm-hmm. enough because mm-hmm. we know you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness that you are because we may need you and we mm-hmm. all need you. So, good work.
Yes, thanks to all of
Thank you.
Yeah, so Fire Prevention Week, any activities planned for the rest of the week?
You know, there is something that, again, getting back to the school's program, we have a poster contest, you know, for the first and second and third grade mm-hmm. classes.
Oh, fun.
And so the winner of the poster contest will get a ride to school in the fire truck.
Yeah. I wish I was a third grader.
Great. You know, if it's okay, we'd love to have a copy of that. We could put it on our message board on our television channels.
It's a once and give in a lifetime a little, opportunity.
Give a little publicity to your winner. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be great.
Super. And that's open to all grade school
that's
kids
right.
for second, third grade?
First and second,
that's
third
great.
Grade.
In Bismarck.
That's right. Yes,
yeah.
In Bismarck.
Yeah. That's awesome. Sure. Great. Yeah, get us the winner. We'll put it up there for him as well. We're running out of time. We're pretty much out of time. Was there anything else we wanted to touch on?
You know, I think this is the topic that we could probably have Owen come back throughout the year and touch on so many things, but just seasonally, with every season that changes. We talked about it earlier this year with the drought conditions, and then we're going to be talking about Thanksgiving coming up, turkey fryers, Christmas, Christmas lights, extension cords, carbon monoxide. There's a lot of things that the fire department can help with.
Every season, there's a
every season
concern.
There's a different Certainly. Highlight.
Yeah, and as we're going into autumn, you know, we're turning on our furnaces. We're here pretty quick. We'd suggest folks have that furnace inspected. Have it inspected annually.
And I see Ben just brought up another graphic about carbon monoxide. We didn't touch on that, but everybody should have one of those in their
absolutely
in their
have
home
a
as well.
Carbon monoxide detector on every level of the house. It's a silent, you know, danger threat in the home. And, you know, as I said, seasonally, it becomes more prevalent with, you know, our furnaces going
closing
on,
up our windows closing and
up
tightening
our homes.
Up for the winter.
Certainly.
Need to have that carbon monoxide detector going as well.
Absolutely.
So
furnace
thank you.
Vents cleared and all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
It all matters. Definitely.
Thank you for helping us out today. This is good information. And again, we hope you do come back. There's
well,
always
thank you.
Something to talk about, I'm sure, with
definitely.
Fire prevention. Just a couple things. Jason, we have some meetings coming up. The Renaissance Zone is meeting
Thursday.
Thursday the 12th.
Yep, 4 o'clock.
Yes.
Those are always public meetings.
They're held
in the second floor conference room, officially referred to as the David J. Blackstead Meeting Room. It's a conference room right adjacent to the planning office. That's coming up Thursday.
Okay.
You'll see a couple more Renaissance Zone projects likely resulting on the next city commission meeting, so we can talk about those next time.
This is where the meetings first hit. And,
yep.
Okay.
The Renaissance Zone is an advisory board, so they hear a lot of the subject matter first, and then their job is to hold a public hearing and then make a recommendation for the city commission to take final action.
Great.
So,
sounds good. The one thing I did neglect to mention, too, that if people want more information about fire prevention issues or just about the Bismarck Fire Department, again, on your website at bismarcknd.gov is available. So
fire department's got their own section of the website. There's all sorts of information. There's even a narrative, the history of the Bismarck Fire Department with some older pictures. And,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so there's some
Let's
neat stuff
out.
Out there.
Yes,
so.
And Fire Marshal Owen Fitzsimmons is always available to answer your questions.
Absolutely.
Which you say you do every day. You have some calls coming in from residents wondering about whatever they need to do to make their home safe.
That's right.
So thank you again. For coming today.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you
very much.
Thank you for watching this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, you can contact the City of Bismarck at bismarcknd.gov or by calling 701-355-1300. If you have any suggestions, comments, or issues you'd like addressed in future City Current episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on KDAC 102.5 FM radio. It's also available as a podcast on kdacfm.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.